There's a great deal of discussion on the first pasuk of Parshas Toldos, specifically because although the words are relatively straightforward, it seems to say the same thing twice. Ve'eleh Toldos Yitzhak ben Avram, the subject is ostensibly Yitzhak's children, but the focus actually in the opening pasuk is more on Yitzhak. The pasuk refers to him first as the son of Avram, and then goes on to emphasize Avram Holides Yitzhak. Of course, on the most simple level, if Yitzhak is the son of Avram, then Avram begat Yitzhak. That's two ways of saying the same thing. Rashi, of course, famously quotes from the Medrash that the reason why there's an emphasis is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu emphasized the point. There was all sorts of talk about Sarah, she'd been taken by Avimelech, and now she's expecting Mi Avimelech, this Abra Sarah, she conceived because of Avimelech. In order to forestall and put an end to such discussions, Tsar Cluster Ponov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed Yitzhak's features so that he looked identical to Avram, so it was clear that Avram begat Yitzhak. So what's interesting is, when the pasuk re-emphasizes it, that's a reflection of the extent to which it was recognized. That is to say, it was true the first time. When the pasuk says it the second time, it was seen as true. Which is a very interesting discussion generally in Pshuto Shel Mikra as to when the pasuk chooses to emphasize things. The extent to which something is emphasized in the pasuk is sometimes not purely a function of whether it's the case or not, but whether it was acknowledged or recognized as the case. So the first half of the pasuk states the fact, and the second half of the pasuk restates the fact, reflecting the recognition of that fact. And yet, there is a bit more to say about this emphasis that Yitzchak is the son of Avram. Yitzchak and Avram were very different from each other, certainly in terms of their primary characteristics, what they're famous for. Avram is always associated with the attribute of kindness, hachnasas orchim, his tent is open from four sides, chesed la Avraham. Yitzchak is a much more private person, and he's normally associated with the more restrictive. Gevuras Yitzchak, pachad Yitzchak, I mean, that's a very different sounding term than chesed. And in a sense, the question is, how do these two relate to each other? And what's very interesting is, as is pointed out by Reb Leib Gurwitz in one of his Ma'amorim, Avram, in his time, was very successful in terms of spreading the word, Vayikra b'shem Hashem, Veshanefesh Hasha'osu Bukharin, he had a large following. Rambam uses the frame in Hilchas Avodos Kechavim, Alofim Urevavos, thousands and myriads, which is a lot. And he had an enormous impact. It's interesting to consider, as Reb Leib Gurwitz wonders aloud, whatever happened to all of those people? Where did they go? If we would ask the question, do we know who their descendants are? Do we know their descendants? If you know someone who's not Jewish, it's a good chance that they're descended from someone who was impacted at the time by Avram. But you'd never know. What happened? Rather, it seems that these people were attracted to Avram's way of doing things. But they were supported by Avram's enthusiasm. That is to say, as long as Avram is there, his dynamic personality, and he has an unending wellspring of kindness and of inspiration, so all you need to do is be receptive. And they were receptive. To their credit, they responded. But when Avram is gone, and now there's Yitzhak, and people didn't relate to Yitzhak as well as they related to Avram. Yitzhak wasn't as, to use oversimplifying terms, he's not as outgoing, and he has a very different way of doing things. And people couldn't sustain it by themselves. And slowly but surely, they faded away. It's kind of came back from whence they came. And we never hear from them again. And there's a great irony here, because they related to Avram and not to Yitzhak, but the result is that the only perpetuation of the way of Avram was through Yitzhak. He was the only one who was able to have the discipline and the persistence to channel the inspiration of Avram and perpetuate it and pass it on as a legacy. So those that were Avram Avinu types faded, and it was the Yitzhak type that carried on the torch from Avram. And this becomes a concept which is key, really, to Torah. It's key to acceptance of Torah. We find, as Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky explains, the very well-known question of Tosfos. It actually preceded Tosfos, but when the Pasuk states with regards to the receiving of the Torah, by Yisyatzvu betachte Sahar, we stood literally underneath the mountain. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos and Daf Peches, Melamed shekofalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sahar kegigis. The mountain was suspended over us. We were forced to receive the Torah. Im atem mekablim es haTorah, mutov. And if not, then that's the end. Shem tek v'rasim. Now, Tosfos observe, you'd kind of get the feeling that we were saying no. And therefore we had to be forced into saying yes. But as it happens, we said yes. I mean, we said Na'aseh v'nishma. So now what room is there to force the Jewish people into receiving the Torah when they've already received it? Should we have said no? I mean, we said the right answer. And still we were forced. What's the contribution of Kofalim as Archegigas once you've already said yes? And many, many answers are given to this question. Tosfos have their own answer, and the question precedes them by many generations. It's in the Medrash Tanchum in Parshas Noach, and the Maharal speaks about it, and so does everyone else. But Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that the lesson for Kabbalah HaTorah, and it's not taking away from the enthusiasm of Na'aseh V'nishma, but the Jewish people were in a euphoric state. I mean, having just experienced Yetzias Mitzrayim, and here they are, Al Kanfei Nesharim, surrounded by the Anani HaKavod, and Matan Torah, who wouldn't say yes? We were on a high. And it was correct to say yes, but something still had to be emphasized. Namely, the notion should not be that if we receive the Torah when we were feeling in this euphoric state, then it's only binding when the Jewish people are feeling in a euphoric state. Because Kabbalah HaTorah is binding for all time. And therefore, in addition to underscore and to reinforce the receiving of the Torah, we said yes, and it was the right answer. But nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forces us to receive the Torah with all that, as if to indicate that we shouldn't think that it depends on the mood and to be in an Avram Avinu type state in order for the Kabbalah HaTorah to be binding. It's always binding, which is more of a Yitzchak type of Kabbalah HaTorah that accompanies it. And indeed, the Shem Mishmuel in Parshas Toldos explains in this light, there's a lot of digging wells in Parshas Toldos. They're dug, and then they're filled in, and then they're dug again, and Avram dug these wells, and then the Plishtim filled them in. And then Yitzchak redug them. And he called them the names that Avram called them. Sitmum Plishtim v'yimalum afar, and v'yashav Yitzchak v'yachboris v'eros hamayim, v'yikroleim shemos kashemos v'yikroleim Avraham. What's the message here? Avram digs wells, and then they're filled in. Says the Shem Mishmuel in a very Hasidic way, that's what happens to Avram's wells. Everything begins with an Avram Avinu type initiative. And one digs the wells, and it's new, and it's fresh, and it's exciting. But within the course of time, the Plishtim come, which represent all of those forces of gravity and negativity. And they fill them in. And that's the time when a person asks themselves, am I back where I started? So what did I gain? It takes a Yitzchak to redig them, because that's already after having suffered something of a disappointment, and the enthusiasm has gone. But the persistence and the discipline remains. And when he reopens them, he recalls them the names that Avram Avinu originally called them, because they are the same wells. Avram Avinu's wells only stay open because Yitzhak redug them. And all of this is heading to the same place. I must say, the timing of discussing a parsha where the wells dug by Avram are filled in by Plishtim cannot be lost on us at a time when the wells dug by the Plishtim have to be filled in by the descendants of Avram, even as we speak. But this is the message of the Shem Yishmuel. And indeed, the Pachad Yitzchak says, this is really the depth behind the scoffing of the Leitzonei Hador. They say, "Mi Avimelech Nisabra Sarah," I mean, where is Yitzchak coming from? Yitzchak is, he's so different than Avram. Maybe it's irreconcilable. When Avram changes Yitzchak's features to look like Avram, what he's saying is that at a certain point, you'll only find the face of Avram on Yitzchak. If you wish to see the perpetuation of the legacy of Avram, you will need to look towards Yitzchak. And all of this, I think, this very central message, which is, it's the message of Kabbalah Satorah. Enthusiasm goes a long way, but it doesn't go all the way. And that's the point where one needs the midah of Yitzchak. And thus the Torah emphasizes, Eile told us Yitzchak ben Avram. Avram told us Yitzchak. It emphasizes the relationship between Avram and Yitzchak to understand that the continuation of Avram comes through Yitzchak and only through Yitzchak. As much as they seem so different on the surface, it is that difference that complements the mid of Avram and gives it continuation, gives it a hemshech. So, finally, Yitzchak and Rivka are blessed with children. It is a mixed blessing, as we know. And the Pasuk states, Perek Kaf Hei Pasuk Kaf Dalet, Vayimlu Yomeh Haloledes. So her days became full to give birth, Vihine Samim Bivitna, and behold, there were twins. On the words Vayimlu Yameha Laledes, Rashi comments. So here it says that the days were filled. That is to say that the pregnancy went full term. Ava v'tamar ksiv vayhi be'es l'detah. If we fast forward two or three parshias, we'll get to parshias Vayeshev, the whole episode with Yehuda and Tamar. And when it came for her to have her children, the pasuk doesn't say Vayimlu Yameha Laledes. Rather, it says, Vayhi be'es l'detah. It was at the time that she gave birth. And there's a contrast there. And the point is, there, Shelo yamu mal'u yameha. There, the pregnancy was not the full 9 months. Ki l'shiva chadoshim yiladetam. Because she actually gave birth after 7 months. That's it. So if you wish to understand what there is to say on these words, Vayimlu'u Yameha, be advised, be aware, says Rashi, that elsewhere it says something else, and the point will be that here it was the full 9 months, but there it was 7 months. The question that we need to ask is, why is Rashi enlisting this additional source of Tamar in order to contrast it? Nothing unusual happened here. Let us assume that the norm is the full term. It's with Tamar that it was early. So when you get to Tamar, we'll talk about Tamar in Parshas Vayeshev, when it says Vayhi be'es l'detah. So Rashi may say, well, just a moment. Why wouldn't it say Vayimlu'u yameha l'dedes? Is there something unusual? Yes, there was something unusual. It was 7 months instead of the full nine. It's the full Tisha Yarche Leda. But if that's the case, that's where there's something unusual. But here, everything's completely normal. So why is Rashi already preemptively contrasting our situation with that of Tamar? That's the first question. Rashi's, I think, we've got enough Rashi's to think about in Parshas Toldos. We don't need additional ones based on previews from later Parshas where we can leave that for there. But the comparison and the contrast doesn't end there. For on the next words it says Vihine Somim Bevitna. Now the word actually is read as Somim. Taf Vav Mem Yud. Of course, we translate it as twins, and twins are Te'omim. which means that this word has been written chaser. In fact, it's missing more than one letter. It's missing the aleph, and it's also missing the yud between the two mems. Okay, so when Rashi says chaser, it's written something's missing. Mefarshe Rashi are wondering which missing letter is Rashi even commenting on, because there's two. Okay, but something's missing, chaser. But you know, there's another set of twins where it actually says the word te'omim male. You know where that is? Tamar. Over Tamar, te'omim male. It's full. Why? Because lefisha shnehem tzadikim. Because in Tamar's case, it was full in the sense of wonderful, complete. Both of her twins were tzadikim, Peretz and Zerach. Avakan, echad tzadik ve'echad rasha. But here there was something slightly deficient, because Yaakov was Yaakov, but Esav also came out as well, and therefore that deficiency within the children is represented in the deficiency in the word of te'omim. Te'omim becomes tomim. And here again, we wonder, why is Rashi talking about this? Is every time a letter goes missing, does Rashi comment? Not always. What is it about the situation? It says, Tomim, Rashi, you know there's a letter missing. Look at Tamar, you'll see Tomim. Why should I look at Tamar? What is it that I can't move past this pasuk? And these questions are discussed by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zatzal, in one of his sichos. And what's interesting is, this Rashi, no one talks about it, almost. Traditional Mefarshi Rashi, there's so much before it and so much after it, nothing here. The Rebbe kind of came in where no one else was, which is a tradition that's followed by many of his followers. And he explains as follows. Rashi has a problem. Namely, our point of departure is that a full-term pregnancy is the norm. If that is true, and the pasuk has never really spoken about this one way or the other before, let's assume that that's the Tisha Yarchei Leda, then the very fact that the pasuk says Vayimlu'u Yameha Loledes, which goes out of its way to state the fact that everything was completely as normal, that's abnormal. In other words, whatever is the norm is to be expected. And if it's to be expected, it doesn't need to be stated. One doesn't need to state the obvious. So the more normal it is, the more unusual it is that the pasuk makes a point of stating it. Because it's almost like news. You know, Vayimlu'u Yameha Loledes. Okay? What am I meant to do with that? So these words actually, they say Darshani. We've never had an expression like this. Many people have been born, and many births have been described in the Torah. Nowhere did it say Vayim Le'uya Mehala Ledes, and here it did. The answer must be that the Torah here is not telling me that the pregnancy was 9 months, because otherwise I would have thought otherwise. But rather, it's making a point of telling me here in order to highlight the fact that here it was the full 9 months. But this should be contrasted with another pregnancy that we will see down the line, which was not. In other words, now that you've seen the pasuk has stated, "Vayimlu'u yameha loledes," be on guard, be alert for another birth which will come soon, where it says "Vayibe es ledeta," and that is conspicuously referring to it very differently as just the time of the birth, but there was no full 9 months, and therefore Rashi already comments on these words here, because they're actually out of place here. They're set up as a marker to contrast with the birth of Tamar, but they're already noteworthy in our pasuk. The only question will be, apparently, all of this is a feeder for me when I get to Parshas Vayeshev, when I see the words Vayhi Be'es Ledeta by Tamar, so I'll know that it wasn't the full 9 months. How do I know? Because elsewhere it says Vayim Le'u Yameha. The question is, but if the target is Tamar, so why is the marker placed so far away? In other words, there will be people born in between Esav and Yaakov and Tamar's children. So why not have one, let's say, closer to Tamar, which says Vayim Le'u Yameha? We assume it's always true, as a matter of course. It just needs to be mentioned once in order to contrast it with Tamar. So let it be the birth before Tamar's birth, and then the contrast will be much more pronounced. Why is the marker to contrast with Tamar so far back in the beginning of Parshas Toldos? There must be some thematic contrast between Tamar's children and Rivka's children. And that is why Rashi proceeds to comment. The reason why the most appropriate birth to contrast with Tamar is Yaakov and Esav is because you have two sets of twins and they are indeed contrasted. Because with Tamar, they're both tzaddikim, and with Yaakov and Esav, one's a tzaddik and one's a rasha. And therefore, Rashi proceeds to comment on the words v'hinei tomim. That it's written chaser because one of the twins wasn't exactly up to par. It could be, says the Rebbe, that Rashi would not have commented on the word tomim by itself. But once we've seen that we're meant to contrast this birth with that of Tamar's children, our question is, why of all of the births, why is this the one chosen? It's because of the difference in nature of the children, and therefore tomim now becomes very much of the essence, that it's chaser as opposed to Tamar's, which is male. But now the question is, why should the fact, if indeed the answer to the question as to why Tamar's pregnancy was 7 months is because both her children were tzaddikim, these are not two unrelated facts. One is an explanation of the other. Because both her children were tzaddikim, that's why she gave birth after 7 months. As opposed to Rivka, it seems, because one of them was a tzaddik and one of them was a rasha, that's why she gave birth after 9 months. That seems to be the relationship. But the question is, well, why should one lean to the other? So on a simple level, Tamar, in a sense, I mean, two are much more trouble than one, and therefore it was something of a, to make it easier for Tamar, that she shouldn't have to carry them for 9 months, and they were tzaddikim, and so they deserved it. That's what it sounds like on a balabatisha level. Whereas Rivka, even though in principle, let us say, let her receive the same treatment, and after 7 months, let them go. But because one of them was a rasha, so they didn't deserve to come out so early. That's how it seems on a balabatisha level. But I think something else is going on. I think that the fact that Esav is such a problematic person, it's not a question of does he deserve to come out early, and does Rivka deserve to be relieved of the pain of her pregnancy early. It's not about making it easier or harder. It's about whether Esav needs to be carried by Rivka for as long as possible. And by that we mean, Esav is a very complicated person. Rivka already knows that he will have a divergent path from Yaakov. Shnei l'umim mime'ayich yiparedu. The question is Esav doomed? In other words, must he become a rasha? It's very difficult to say that, because if from birth he had to be a rasha, then one of the most famous villains in all of Torah actually should be absolved of any responsibility for his actions, because he had no choice. I mean, it was foretold that he must be a rasha, so then he must have had a choice. But what then is the nature of this prophecy that they'll take divergent paths? Divergent paths doesn't mean that Esav has to be a rasha, but it certainly means that he's not really heading in the same way as Yaakov. He can redeem himself and he can channel it and he can do all sorts of things. And moreover, the fact that Esav was carried by Rivka at all goes a long way. This is something that is pointed out by the Meshech Chochma. When Rivka says there's so much trouble inside of her, she knows that one of her sons is a little bit deficient, shall we say, in moral fiber. So she asks, Lama ze anochi? Why is this me? And she goes to find out what it's all about. What is the meaning of her question? Why is this me? Lama ze anochi? So Meshech Chochma explains that Rivka suspects that one of her children is not up to par. Now that's not the first time this has happened in Avram's family. I mean, Yishmael also was left a lot to be desired. And Yitzchak was the only one that really carried on in Avram's way. And perhaps this indeed is what will happen with these two children. Maybe only one of them will carry on in Yitzchak's way. The question of Rivka is, if one of these children isn't really going to be part of the program, so why am I carrying him? In other words, Yishmael was not carried by Sarah. The union of Avram and Sarah led to Yitzchak. Yishmael came from someone else. He came from Hagar. So if one of Rivka's children is a second Yishmael, so what's he doing inside of me, says Rivka? Why isn't he being carried by somebody else? That's the Shaila. Lama ze anochi? But the answer is, Shnei goyim bevitneich. And Rashi from the Medrash explains that what this means is that there are certain descendants of Esav who actually became great Jews, became great Goyim. Rebbe of Antoninus, whoever he was, Antoninus, right? He was of Esav descent, and he became Jewish, and he was a great friend of the Jews. And there are many others like that. And Rabbi Meir was descended from Nero, and a lot of our greats, Rabbi Akiva. And these are from Esav. And Meshech Chochma explains that it took a while to come to fruition, but the goodness within Esav came out through many of his descendants, who became outstanding Jews. And that wouldn't have happened had he not been carried by Rivka. There would have been no redeeming features. One doesn't like to say, actually nowadays one doesn't like to say anything of this nature, but with Yishmael, there haven't really been that many outstanding Jews throughout the course of history. But the descendants of Esav there have, and that's because Esav was carried by Rivka. And therefore, in a sense, it's very open. One could never really say with definitely, beginning from the pregnancy itself, this is exactly how Esav will be. If there's redeeming features in his descendants, perhaps there's hope for Esav himself. And therefore, the Pasuk makes a point of saying that when it came to this pregnancy, there was no easy way out. Not for Rivka, not for her children. But the reason why is because one of them is Esav, and he needs all the help he can get. The longer he's carried by Rivka, the more of Rivka he has in him. The more he's nurtured by Rivka in the most direct way possible. And the hope is that that will impact on his character. Peretz and Zerach are tzaddikim. So after 7 months, they can go. But Esav, he needs the full 9 months. And even then, who knows if it will help. But that was the hope. And in fact, and this is it's a fascinating observation of the Rebbe here, because it says, in Pasuk Kaf Dalet, Vayimlu Yameha Laledes, Vihinei Somim Bivitna. Now the word Vihinei always introduces some type of development. Something's happened. But what is it that happened? It's a fascinating question, because although we would say Vihinei Tomim Bivitna, and you know what? There were two of them. The problem is, that much is not news. Because the last two psukim have been about the fact that there's two, she's carrying two children. That much we know. Shnei goyim bevitneich. I mean, this was, she knew from the beginning that there's going to be two of them. So if we already know that there's two children inside of her, so that when the Pasuk says, v'hinei tomim bevitna, the non-development here, the non-news that there's two of them, that much I knew. So where is the word v'hinei? What does it catch? What's the news here? The news here is that even though Vayimlu yameha laledes, in other words, even though she carried Esav as long as she could, nonetheless, when he came out as more than just divergent in a benign way, but he came out severely deficient still and had a long way to go. Echad tzadik ve'echad rasha. But that's the vihinei, because that was the ongoing question. Maybe it will help him if he's carried by Rivka for longer. But that said, it still helped in terms of his descendants, as we saw, Antoninus and Rebbe Meir. So it just took a while to come out. But what is true in an overarching way, if we compare and contrast, and this is the final comment of the Rebbe here, is that there's very much a connection between these two sets of twins. Because the extent to which Esav is irredeemably deficient, and his descendants become the oppressors of the Jewish people, they are taken to task by the children of Tamar. Because the son of Tamar is Peretz, and Peretz is the forebear of the Mashiach. And therefore, there's a great deal of parallel here between the twins of Tamar. Ultimately will be the response to the twins of Rivka, to one of them, in the event that he doesn't come good by himself. So these are some of the comments, and again, it's such a, if we've seen the Rashi, Rivka and Tamar, and Tomim this way, Tomim that way, but the more we look in to what's behind the Rashi, the more we see the insights and the themes at play here. The first episode, first encounter between Yaakov and Esav is the sale of the Bechorah. And that's to be found in the end of Perek Kaf Hei, by Yozid Yaakov Nazid. So Yaakov, he has these lentils, this cooked dish, and Esav comes in, and he's hungry, and he's dying, and he's thirsty, and etc. So Yaakov says, "Byoma Yaakov michrachayom es becharos chali." This is the famous sale of the birthright, and Mefarshim are wondering what happened in this sale. Birthright doesn't seem to be the type of thing that one can sell. And you could sell a pot of lentils, and you understand what it means. It used to belong to A, and now it belongs to B. But the notion of a birthright means that this person was born first. Even after the sale, he was still born first. I mean, that you can't sell a historical fact. At least you didn't used to be able to. In principle, it doesn't sound correct. So what exactly is the measure of this sale? Sell me your bechorah, sell me your firstbornness. What is the meaning of that? And Mefarshim discuss in many different ways. But a very different angle, a new angle to this question comes from the Sefer Nachlas Yaakov. Nachlas Yaakov is a commentary on Rashi by Rabbi Yaakov Selnik, great early Acharonim. And as far as he's concerned, something else is going on here entirely. When we talk about the notion, you know, can you sell the birthright? Can't be sold? What's Yaakov asking for here? The truth is, says the Nachlas Yaakov, that there's a prior question. You see, the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Nedarim, in Daf Lamed Aleph, that if a person takes a neder, and of course Nedarim is the Mishnah's way of defining everything, because if you take a neder from a certain item, you need to know what's defined as that item, or from a certain group of people, you need to know how that group of people are defined. If a person takes a neder from Zera Avraham, that means that he makes a neder and he wishes to include in that neder there are descendants of Avraham. He's not going to have any benefit from any of them. Okay, I mean, that's a person who's about to build a new shul, you understand. But that's how it starts. So who is included in Zera Avraham? Says the Mishnah, it's Mutter, not included in that group are descendants of Yishmael or Esav. Why not? I mean, why are they not considered halachically, as far as the Torah is concerned, Zera Avraham? So the Gemara there quotes the famous Drosha, based on the Pasuk in Parshas Vayera. Hashem says to Avram, Ki v'Yitzchak yikar l'chazara. Only Yitzchak is considered to be your descendant in many critical respects. Don't worry, you can send Yishmael away. Al yirabenecha l'rabba basecha. Ki v'Yitzchak yikar l'chazara. And moreover, not only does Yitzchak exclude Yishmael, but there's an internal circuit here, because the Pasuk doesn't say, Ki Yitzchak yikar l'chazara, Yitzchak will be your descendant, Ki b'Yitzchak. And the base means only some of Yitzchak will be considered your descendant. And therefore, Yaakov and not Esav. And that's why we find that as the parshios progress, we see how Yishmael is sidelined. Specifically, in the end of Parshas Chayesara, and this Reb Velvel Soloveitchik says, the end of Chayesara lays a lot of emphasis on Yishmael, how settled they were. Bechatzrehem, uvetirosam, they're in their towers, they're in their citadels, they're in their cities. What does that mean? All of this, says Reb Velvel, is coming to emphasize the fact that they're not part of Zera Avram, because Avram was told, Ki ger yezarecha be'eretz lo lahem. Your descendants will be strangers. They will not be settled in that way. And therefore, the Pasuk stresses that Yishmael, they're fully settled. Bechatzrehem, uvetirosam, and that leads to, Ve'ele told us Yitzchak ben Avram. That means that Yitzchak is the only descendant of Avram, because Yitzchak is not settled. And indeed, if we just move into the Haggadah Shal Pesach for a moment, when we quote the Psukim from Yehoshua, about Mitchila Ovde Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu, and then Va'achshav Kevon Hamokam Lavodoso. So we quote the psukim, three psukim from Yehoshua, and one of them is about Terach Vayavdu Alehim Achirim. But then we keep on going. I took Avram, Va'olichaso, and I gave him Yitzchak, and I gave Yitzchak Esav. Va'etein le'Esav is Har Seir Lo Reshes Oso, V'Yaakov Uvonov Yordu Mitzrayim. And that seems to be a great digression from what the Haggadah is meant to be talking about. I mean, we've gone off topic. The topic is, originally our fathers were idol worshippers, and now Hashem brought us close to his service. But we don't stop quoting the psukim until we've mentioned the one which says that Esav was given Har Seir to inherit it, and Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim. Why is that germane to this section of the Haggadah? But Revelvel says the point is the same, because Avram's descendants are part of a program called Kigeria Zarocha Be'eretz Lo'lahem. They never got that inheritance. The giving of Har Seir as Esav to an inheritance is the sidelining of Esav from the category of Zera Avram. He's not a Ger, Be'eretz Lo'lahem. He's the lord of the manor. He's inherited Har Seir, and that means he's out. And therefore, strictly speaking, as far as the Torah is concerned, as far as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned, Avram only has one child to speak of, and that's Yitzhak, and Yitzhak only has one child to speak of, and that's Yaakov. And in fact, this relates to a discussion even in the Nusach HaTfilah. The question arose. In Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, so in the middle bracha, the bracha of Zichronos, it ends by a reference to the Akedah, and the final words before the concluding bracha are Va'akedas Yitzchak Lezaro Hayom Barachamim Tizkor. Remember Akedas Yitzchak for his descendants. Now, the question was raised by Rishonim. Isn't that like a little bit too open? As if to say that if we're asking Hashem to remember Akedas Yitzchak for his descendants, well, Yitzchak has many descendants. And not all of them are the ones that we wish Hashem to have mercy on them. The Jewish part, okay? But what about Esav? Esav is also descended from Yitzchak. Wouldn't it be better to be a bit more specific? Which of Yitzchak's descendants Hashem should remember the Akedah Barachamim? And indeed, there were certain Rishonim who suggested that the Nusach should be the Akedah Yitzchak Lezaro Shel Yisrael, or Lezaro Shel Yaakov, Hayom Barachamim Tizkor. Don't leave it open as Lezaro, implying Yitzchak's descendants. He has two types of descendants, but rather, to make it specific, Lezaro Shel Yaakov. But the Shulchan Aruch himself, in Siman Tavkuf Tzadik Aleph, says there's no need. Because as far as the Torah is concerned, the only descendants that answer to that description of Yitzchak is Yaakov anyway. If you say Vakedas Yitzchak Lezaro, when you talk about Zera Yitzchak, the Mishnah has already told you that's only a reference to Yaakov. There is no need to modify or fine-tune the Nusach of the Tefillah there. So here we are, on the one hand, it's reflected halachically in terms of the halachos of Nedarim, and it's based in these psukim and these drashas, that Yitzchak essentially is only really considered to have one descendant, and that's Yaakov. Esav isn't really in the picture. Now, if he's not in the picture, so what are his chances of being the firstborn? If he's not considered, and this says the Nachlas Yaakov, if you put these two discussions next to each other, if he's not, strictly speaking, considered to be even the child of Yitzchak, as far as the Torah is concerned, so what are his chances of being the firstborn child? Which means that in reality, Yaakov is the Bechor anyway. Because, and that's the easy way to be a Bechor, if you're the only child. If that's true, then the question now becomes, so why does Yaakov have to do anything? I mean, if he is the only viable and recognized descendant of Yitzchak, he is instantly, by definition, the Bechor. So why does he need to purchase the Bechorah from Esav? The answer, says the Nachlas Yaakov, is very simple. Because Esav presumably does not darshan the Pasuk that way. And presumably, he did not. He was absent from Dafyomi when they learned Nedarim, Daf Lamed Aleph. Which means that Esav will not accept, with good grace, that he is automatically not part of the legacy of Yitzhak as far as he's concerned. He's very much part of the legacy of Yitzhak. But if that's true, it's such a different way of looking at this whole encounter, the purchase of the birthright. Nothing actually had to happen. The whole thing was an external transaction so that even in Esav's mistaken view of himself, he would be prepared to abdicate from his rights as the Bechor. But as is the case with more or less every other aspect of Esav's life, this wasn't real. It was only an external way of arranging things. Which means that what Yaakov is saying is, I would like to purchase the Bechor. If you agree, so then one can never ask, well, nothing really happened. Because really, really, you weren't the Bechor anyway. So as far as if you are prepared to part with the Bechorah, that's all I want. I don't want you laying claim to the Bechorah. That's what it's about. It's not about an actual sale. Bechorah can't be sold. It's about Yaakov getting Esav to agree not to lay claim or cause any problems as Yaakov assumes the role of the Bechorah. And in fact, that's why you find that it isn't really conducted the way a sale is conducted. As much as Yaakov says, Michra Kayom, sell me the Bechorah, and Esav says, okay, then Yaakov says, Vayomer, Hishavali! Hishavali Kayom! Take an oath, take a shavua. No transaction needs a shavua. Where does that come in? How is that part of the sale? It says the Nachlas Yaakov, that's the point. There was no sale. The goal of Yaakov is just that Esav should never lay claim against the Bechorah. And therefore, to that end, if you want to call it a sale, call it a sale. He asks for a shavua further to distance Esav from claiming the Bechorah. That's all there is to it. So this is, as I said, a very, perhaps an unconventional way of looking at the sale. The question doesn't begin as to, one doesn't need to wonder how the sale could happen, the more one realizes that no sale was actually necessary. Something else entirely is going on. So that's with regards to the Bechorah, and that was the first confrontation, really, between Yaakov and Esav. And it has the roots of later confrontations, indeed, as the Balaturim points out. When it says, Esau says, Haliteini na min ha'adom. Ha'adom hazeh. Give me to eat from that food. He follows his impulses. Haliteini na, the Rosh HaTevis of Haliteini na min, are the letters of the name Haman. Because this is already the beginnings of the confrontation with all of the types of Hamans. In fact, some suggest that's why there's a very interesting minhag on Purim to eat minei zironim, to eat seeds. And pulses and that sort of thing. It's not just getting rid of the kidneys a month before Pesach. There's all sorts of reasons offered for this minhag of minei zironim. That some suggest it's lezeicher the nezid adoshim, which was the first victory of Yaakov or Esav, which already has the roots of Haman. Haliteini na min ha'adom adom hazeh. So from the Bechorah, we move to the issue of the brachos, which is certainly the sticky issue towards the end of Parshas Toldos, Yaakov taking the brachos. And we have simple questions. That doesn't mean they're simple to answer, but they're where we have to begin. Yitzchak wants to give the brachos to Esav. And the question is, why? And if we say that he feels that Esav is a bigger tzaddik than Yaakov, that's rather difficult to understand for many, many reasons. Even if he thinks that Esav isn't as bad as he thinks, that doesn't make him a Yaakov. When he sends Esav out to hunt, I mean, he has no illusions as to what Esav does with his time. And there are many Mefarshim, this is the Arachayim HaKadosh and many others who explain Yitzhak is looking somehow to redeem Esav, that is to say, to channel his way of doing things into the Torah cause ultimately, into Hashem's cause ultimately. That is to say, he's a man of the field, Yodei Atzayid, Ish Tzadeh. Well, the Jewish people need men of the field. They've got to be Jewish, but they've got to act Jewish, but we need all sorts of enterprise. And therefore, Yaakov is Ish Tam Yosheb Vaholim, and we certainly need them. The moral of the story is, can they somehow be paired together? A kind of a forerunner of the famous Yisachar Zevulun relationship, and Esav will be in the field, and Yaakov will be learning, and it will, as long as they're aligned with each other and they share the same vision, that can be a very good outcome. There's room for Esav in Yitzchak's program, but he needs help, and for that he needs the brachos. The unfortunate reality was, as is known by Rivka, is that Esav is beyond salvage. That means he's already, whether he ever had a chance, even if he did, he's closed too many doors by this stage. And therefore Rivka understands that she knows Esav better than Yitzchak does. And as some unfortunately point out, Esav he's very good at deceiving people. But Rivka knows the Rebbe. And Rivka grew up with Lavan. And Lavan's the master. So she knows a Lavan when she sees him. And they say that the sons, they take after the mother's brother. So she's looking out for a Lavan in her children. She found him in Esav. And she knows all the tricks. Because she grew up with the one who invented most of them. And therefore, she knows that. And apparently, to discuss it with Yitzhak, it won't make a difference. Because Yitzhak is perhaps too optimistic, but Rivka knows. And therefore, Yaakov has to take the brachos. Now, Yaakov thinks it's not going to work. Yaakov says in Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Yud Beis, Ulai Yimusheni Avi, I'll be found out, because maybe, if he'll, feel my arms or something like that, which probably he will as a prelude to the bracha, because he's gonna hug me and kiss me, right? That physical contact, it's a prelude to the bracha. But then I'm gonna be found out. Now what's very interesting is, it's clear from the pasuk here, that Yaakov doesn't think that he'll be found out unless Yitzchak feels his arms. If he knew that wouldn't happen, apparently he wouldn't have any reservations. But why is that so? Why will Yitzchak not recognize that his voice is different than Esav? Apparently, said Rambam, it's clearly implied by the psukim, that that's not a worry. Either it's not a worry because Yaakov knows that he is capable of sounding like Esav, he's confident that he can do that, or it could be, says Rambam, maybe he naturally sounded like Esav. In other words, we focus so much on the differences, but remember, they're twins. You never know to what degree that they're the same. Whatever the case is, that's not the issue. And it's interesting because until we take this into account, for us, the critical issue will be as soon as he says, I'm Esav, he'll be found out. But that's not so. That's not the worry. He feels that he'll be able to carry. What's very interesting is, the Malbim says, and I think maybe you need to be the Malbim to say this, but in Pasuk Yud Ches, it says, Vayavo el aviv, vayomer avi. He came to his father and he said, Father, vayomer hineni, here I am, miyata b'ni. Who's that? What's the original, this initial exchange? Avi? Who is that? And then he says, I'm Esav. So the Malbim says, in Pasuk Yud Ches, he's trying it out. In other words, this is the point before he says he's Esav, where he speaks to his father just to see maybe his father will tell him straight away. That is to say, if he comes and says Avi, and his father says, yes, Yaakov, so then he's able to get out before he endangered himself. But because he said Avi and his father, yes, who is that? That means it's still open, it could be Esav. And at that point, he engaged. And furthermore, we see that even when Yitzchak gets, I guess, a little suspicious, and says "Gishana v'mushcha b'ni," right? Let me just see, is it really you? But it wasn't over the voice, because in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, "Vayomer Yitzchak el Yaakov, Gishana v'mushcha b'ni, hataze b'ni Esav lo." Are you really Esav? Why did he say that? Rashi tells us the reason why he said that is because Yaakov did something that Esav would never do. Yitzchak said, "How come you're back so quickly?" Vayomer ki hikra Hashem elokecha lefana. Hashem helped me, and a flag went up for Yitzchak. Hashem helped you? Something is suspicious here. But it's the usage of Hashem's name, which is interesting on two fronts. Number one, we have to find out why that's so unusual. But number two, so why did Yaakov say this? I mean, it's, if he wants it to work, could he not have helped himself and just said, you know, I got lucky or something like that? He couldn't help it, even though he got himself into trouble. Hashem, help me. If he did, that's what I've got to say. But we see that it's over the usage of Hashem's name, because if it's just about the voice, then Yitzhak would have asked him already after Pasuk Yutes, because he's already said a whole sentence full. In Pasuk Yutes, he's already said, Anochi Esa Becharecha, Asisi, Kasher Dibarte Elai, Kumna Shivava, Ochla Mitzedi, Bavorte Vachanin Navshecha. He said that whole Pasuk, and Yitzhak didn't say anything. Yitzhak just says, why are you back so early? But when he responds to the second one and says, Hashem, help me, Yitzhak says, just a moment, we need to find out who you really are. But the question is, and Rashi says this, that Esav would never say something like that. But remember, this is the same Rashi who's told us that Yitzchak thinks that Esav is actually quite a medaktik b'mitzvahs. This is the same Rashi that when the Pasuk says that Esav is Yodei Tzayid, he knows how to trap people, and one of the people that he trapped the most is his father. He deceived him. Why? He has his famous kashas. How do you take miser from salt and from straw? And his father thought, well, he's medaktik b'mitzvahs. So how do those two rashis go together? As on the one hand, he's asking all these very particularistic halachic questions. But on the other hand, when he says Hashem's name, Yitzhak says, that's not Esav. Does he think he's in the program or not? So the Maharal says very, very simply, Esav never uses Hashem's name, and Yitzchak thought the reason why is out of Yiras Shamayim. He didn't want to overuse Hashem's name. He has such reverence for Hashem's name that he never uses it. And in a sense, this resonates with Yitzchak's midah, because Yitzchak's midah is Pachad Yitzchak. He's not free and easy. He's very disciplined, and to say Hashem's name without full kavanah is a mistake. It's a fault, and therefore he looks benignly on the fact that he sees it as a symptom of Yiras Shamayim. But he doesn't want to say Hashem's name at all. So just for Yaakov to say, Hashem help me, that seems to be Esav slipping from his madrega of Yiras Shamayim. Something is up. It's very interesting how different things can be interpreted that way. But now, when it's all over, Yaakov has the brachas. And the Abarbanel is the one to ask the question. How was this possible? Not how was it permissible. Yitzhak is Yaakov is following Rivka's instructions, and she has Nevuah that this is what he has to do. But how is it possible? Just on any level. Yitzhak had in mind to bless Esav. Yaakov comes in posing as Esav. And by the end, Yaakov was blessed. If you ask Yitzhak who was blessed, it was Esav. He intended the brachos for Esav. Someone then came and said that he was Esav, but then that person is the one who's blessed? How did that happen? How can one steal brachos? Perhaps they're non-transferable. Perhaps if he means them for Esav, it's not just anyone who says that they're Esav, and they'll be the ones that get the brachos. That is the question. But apparently it worked. The Abarbanel says that in this case, Yitzchak functioned as nothing more than a conduit for divine blessing, which means that he completely nullified his own direction for where the blessing should go, and whoever was at the receiving end of the blessing, they're the one. It wouldn't be influenced by who Yitzchak thought it should go for. So he's completely nullified as a personality as he becomes a conduit for this blessing. And Yaakov is there, and Yaakov got it. The Malbim says, this is why Yitzchak emphasizes, V'avorech echa lifnei Hashem lifnei Mosi, before Hashem, meaning in the presence of the Shechina, so that the Shechina will bless through Yitzchak, but it's not Yitzchak so much giving the brachas anymore, and therefore it's not up to him who they go to. Whoever receives, they're the one that gets. But what's very interesting is, Rav Leib Hyman Zatzal of the Knesset Agro in Began, he explains that actually there was a bit more multi-layered, and in fact it worked in stages, because if we take a look at Pasuk Lamed Gimel, So this is when Yaakov has already got the brachas, and Esav comes in, he wants the brachas, and then Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vayecharad Yitzchak Harada Gedolad Me'od, he trembled. Vayomer mi efo atzatzayit vayavili. So who's the one that trapped and came and brought to me vaochal mikol beterem tavo varachayu? Someone's already come before you came, and I blessed him. Gam baruch yihyeh. What is the meaning of gam baruch yihyeh? It sounds like that Yitzchak is re-emphasizing, even as he knows that it's no longer Esav, and who else is it going to be? But it's no longer Esav. At this stage, he says gam baruch yihyeh. But what's interesting is the word gam. Where does the word gam feature? To say baruch yihyeh, gam baruch yihyeh means also. And what is the meaning? Also, in addition to what, or in addition to whom? And that's where Yitzhak understands that it must have been divinely orchestrated that the one he thought was Esav was really Yaakov, which means his intention was for Esav, but the actual person in front of him was for Yaakov, which means at this point he's not saying to Esav, you don't get the bracha, you will get the bracha because I meant it for you, but he also will get the bracha. Gam baruch yihyeh, also in addition to you. So that's interesting because it's split up into two, Yitzhak's intention and the reality as it happened. And he sees that both of them found their mark. You, of course, will get some aspect of the bracha, but he will also get some. Gam baruch yihyeh. At this point, Esav responds with a bracha, with a gam of his own. Because he says in Lamadale, Kishmo Esav istifri aviv, vayitzak tzakar gedolah marabot. In other words, bless me as well, meaning I'm not content just to have the inner intent of the bracha. Whereas he got the gam also. I also want the also, which means bless me now when I'm in front of you. But then Yitzhak says, it can't be done. Vayomer ba achicha bimirma vayikach birchasecha. Your brother came by Mirma, he came by Mirma, deceit. Well, Uncle says in wisdom, whatever it was, he's done it. I think what's most interesting about this expression, is that it's missing a word. Whenever you have an item, that there's an action that relates to that item, there's always the word es. The pasuk should have said, but it says, vayikach birchasecha. Why is the word S missing? Well, no one knows how to translate the word S, but you know when it's missing. And when the word S is missing, that means something is missing. In other words, Yaakov at that stage hadn't taken the entire bracha. I mean, Esav still got some of it, because Esav is the one that Yitzhak intended it for, but there is an aspect of the bracha. And how does the pasuk indicate that there was an aspect of the bracha? It writes vayikach, but doesn't have the full expression because it wasn't the full bracha that was taken. And you see that it's more pronounced in Esav's words. Because Esav says, ha, he's called Yaakov. Vayakveni zepa amayim. Es b'chorasi lakach, v'hine ata lakach birchasi. He mentions Yaakov taking two things, the b'chora and the brachos. And when it comes to the b'chora, he says es. Es b'chorasi. When it comes to the brachos, he doesn't say es birchasi. He says birchasi. Except, in Pasuk Lamed Vav, Esav made a terrible blunder, because this is the point that he told his father that he'd sold the Bechora to Yaakov. That did not work well for him at all, because that's when his true colors came out. He couldn't help it. He blew up and said, that's the second time. Second time? When was the first time? He took my Bechora. Really? He took it from you? Well, I mean, he gave me a plate of lentils for it, but essentially he took it from me. Why did you part for it for a plate of lentils? Yitzhak is finding out a lot about Esav right now. And so much so, in fact, that Yitzhak does not go back to give him a bracha. And it seems that Yaakov gets more and more of the bracha because Yitzhak realizes he made a mistake. And in Bionis and Ibishut says in the Yaros Devash that it should be asked the question, well, how did Yaakov get the brachas? I mean, it's a mistake. So he makes a very sobering comment. The reality is that Yaakov is the one that got the brachos. But should you say that Yitzhak didn't mean it for Yaakov, and had he only known that it wasn't Esav, he wouldn't have given him the brachos, That's the sliding scale, because if he just continued the sentence, had he only known what Esav was really like, he wouldn't have given Esav the brachas. Which means in terms of the external reality, Yaakov is the one that got them. And in terms of the internal, if only Yitzchak had known, so if you just say that again, so the internal reality is based on a mistake, and therefore it becomes nullified. And at that point, Yaakov is the one who emerges with all of the brachas. But nonetheless, there is one vestige of Yitzchak's original intention to give the brachas to Yaakov, and that is, he says, when Yaakov slips, kasher tarid, if you have just cause to complain that Yaakov doesn't deserve to have stolen the brachas, ufarakta ulo me'al tzavarecha, then he will have no hold over you, and you will actually be a force against him. And therefore something remained, a vestige of the fact that Esau was the original, because the extent to which Yaakov doesn't live up to the true receiver of the blessings, even though he can never be as bad as Esav, nonetheless Esav retains that which is a lot of Jewish history, is yet Esav complaining about Yaakov receiving the brachas, whether he does so beyodim or below yodim. And for that we are waiting for Yaakov to come back to par, and Olam Moshiim Baharzion Lishbotas Har Esav, the twins of Tamar will come back and deal with one of the twins of Rivka, Vayisal Hashem HaMalucha B'meher B'yamin Amin.